Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Agency Chat. We do the Woo Podcast Show. Woo! Woo! Woo Agency Chat is brought to you by Managed WooCommerce Hosting at GoDaddy. As an agency, if your clients are looking to expand their store, you can deliver them a fully customized WooCommerce site. Stay tuned in while I tell you more about GoDaddy later in the show. Today on Woo Agency Chat, this is where guests become co-hosts. Joining us is Niels from Level Level and Marius from WP Writers. Join in as they chat between themselves, meeting for the first time and diving into agency life.
I am Niels de Blauw, and I'm a WordPress enthusiast with a development background and work as the technical director at a Dutch WordPress agency called Level Level. And with me today is Marius Vetrici.
Hi, everyone. And thanks for the intro, Niels.
So to get started, I've been in web development for over 13 years now and got started with WordPress 8 years ago at Level Level. There we make bespoke WordPress websites for e-commerce, Dutch government, banks, NGOs, and more. And we do that with a focus on digital accessibility. And other than that, we have an e-learning platform for accessibility called the Ali Collective and maintain open source software such as the WooCommerce Testing Automation Library. And Marius, you are the founder of WordPress Writers, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm the founder of WordPress Writer Agency and e-commerce tools plugins. We have a child business, which is building and selling WooCommerce-based plugins. And in terms of background, we are a software development company. We started with WordPress about 9 years and a half ago, currently serving customers in Switzerland and in the US. And we help build and maintain large web portals, e-commerce platforms with WooCommerce, but also with Shopify. We also work with LMSs. And besides web development, I have an interest in AI. I do more and more research on this, and I build AI-based solutions and provide advisory on how to mate with AI. And with WordPress, I jumped on the WordPress boat, I think 15 years ago, when I started blogging. And 10 years ago, as a freelancer, I started serving customers. And then slowly, that freelancing one-man show thing converted into an agency.
So there's a lot of different things that you've done to grow into all of these roles, right? Was it natural for you to grow into this?
Yeah, it was organic. Indeed, it started as a one-man show. Currently, we're 22 people, but somehow I was lucky to build on a prior experience. I had another software company for 10 years, building products using .NET technologies, document management, inventory management. So I kind of leveraged all of that into this conversion from being a freelancer to running the agency.
One thing we have in common was that we both come from non-WordPress development background and then moved into working with WordPress. I think having prior knowledge of WordPress helped me hit the ground running. And with the quality documentation that there is for beginners, it was quite easy to get into, even though the documentation has improved quite a bit over the years. So how was that for you? Were there any big hurdles getting into WordPress?
I don't think there was any hurdle because the learning curve for WordPress, it's so much. It used to be before JavaScript and Gutenberg. It used to be so much lower than with other technologies. So I don't think there was any hurdle. I was pretty lucky to ride a couple of ways. So I had the technical background, and it took me like 1 month to get started, to get up to speed with WordPress and actually start serving clients as a freelancer because of the prior 10 plus years experience in coding. And then I was lucky to join in a very early stage Codable, a freelancer platform, which gave me a steady flow of customers. It also educated me on customer communication and setting expectations. So yeah, that was a very fortunate combination of factors.
Getting into WordPress at first, I was amazed how much it did out of the box, mainly around data management. Before WordPress, I must have written the same, is this an email address and is this input field actually a valid URL validators hundreds of times, and WordPress just makes these repetitive things so easy. It frees up so much time.
I understand. Yeah, again and again.
Yeah, so you can make WordPress as difficult as you want yourself, right? And a lot of best practices from the rest of the PHP world have been adopted now by WordPress developers like our agency as well. So things like object-oriented programming, static analyzers, dependency injection, maybe design patterns, unit and integration testing, code reviews, dependency management with Composer. All these things are part of our current workflow now. But there's a lot of moving parts, and the community is providing a lot of code through plugins that might not be up to our standard. So how do you manage this?
That's a very interesting perspective, and thanks for sharing. I was actually talking to scores, dozens of hardcore developers, non-WordPress developers, and I hearing say the same opinion again and again. Oh, WordPress, it's not even object-oriented, no design patterns. This is under my current level. I was like, okay, that seems like an opportunity for us. So that's why I'm very happy to meet a like-minded fellow like yourself.
Yeah, it gets messy fast.
And I actually see a little bit of a challenge here with, because you mentioned the automated testing. And from my perspective, I keep seeing this challenge. Again, comparing the other technologies with WordPress with the other technologies like Java Enterprise Edition or maybe with .NET, there all the updates and changes are mostly being managed by somebody, a centralized entity, which is obviously good and bad. But here, when you own a website, I'm not even talking about building a website at an agency. When you are a client and you have at least 20 plugins, let's say at least 20 plugins, each of them having their own version, you're basically responsible for the integration testing of those plugins. You're responsible for making sure that they work. And of course, at the end of the day, you hire an agency to do that for you. But when you have so many moving parts, each of them being built by a third party, each of them randomly releasing new versions. I mean, this is an amount of work that probably not many website owners are really aware of. How do you deal with that?
So one thing we do is we rely heavily on integration testing within our projects. So we test critical parts of a website, both through automation and manual testing. And we manage a lot of clients, so issues that pop up for one customer or lessons learned for the next project. Any client benefits from the fact we manage more sites like them. So you're on both sides of the equation, right? On one hand, you are managing an agency with these issues related to plugins and updating and compatibility. And on the other hand, you're building plugins yourself and can only test so much. So how do you balance this?
That's a very good question. We'll look, before we decide to build a feature for our plugins, by the way, the plugins are related to subscriptions. They're, one of them is called buy one or subscribe. The other one is called self-service commerce subscriptions. And before deciding to launch a new feature, we always think about the total cost of ownership of that feature, including the maintenance, future updates to that feature. And when you look at the feature through that lens, if that feature requires some integration with third-party plugins, let's say with WooBundles or WooComposite products, we know that's going to factor in an exponential amount of work and updates and maintenance, because those plugins, again, they will randomly change. So to answer your question, we try to build our features as much self-contained as possible with as few dependencies as possible.
And then with the plugins that you mentioned, they're mostly plugins built by Woo with the automatic
team behind it. So these are somewhat stable, reliable kind of projects, even though they're moving fast and changing stuff. There's like a bigger picture. And there's also, of course, a single entity builders that create a product and then abandon it after 2-3 months that you have to take care of. So
I'm not even talking about those who abandon, even when, and that's a very good example with Automattic. Even with Automattic, you get certain updates inside the code that they just come, they just hit you. It is what it is. I'm not saying it's good or it's bad. It's a fact of life, but someone needs to take care of all of that. And you mentioned before the talk that's our big automated testing, the shopping carts, and making sure it actually works. How are you doing it? Maybe you can elaborate on this on a bit.
So when you're talking about total cost of ownership for our customers, it's almost always more expensive to have a failing, like a critical process. People can't buy the products on the website because they're spending advertising. These people are reaching the websites trying to buy a product. And if things don't work, it's not only like missed revenue, but also like they're making costs to get these customers. So keeping the business critical process alive is like the number one priority for us. And when we're talking about having 20 plus plugins that integrate with each other and then having a bespoke layer on top of it, like we do for most of our customers, we really need to make sure that everything keeps working. So one of the things that we do is we have an open sourced testing library called WordPress Browser WooCommerce. And it's an extension on top of WordPress Browser, which allows like WooCommerce developers to write in the same way that you would for WordPress Core. So the factories that you know from WordPress Core unit test, like the this factory user create or the this post create, we also make the WooCommerce functions available in the same manner. So now suddenly there's a this factory order create or product create or coupon create or shipping zone create. So all these like sometimes a bit difficult to test things, like we're shipping to 20 different countries, but they all have their own business rules, are automatable through this library. And we create scenarios for like every single feature that we build to keep them tested through integration so that we make sure that every single part of the chain of plugins is working as we expected. So when there's updates to like a cost of goods plugin, we can update it, see if the test fails, and then fix either the way we integrate with it or, and also a thing that guards us from like these unexpected updates. And this is mostly related to like changes in the programming interface, is that we're heavy users of PHP Stan, like the static analyzer, which shows us like this function is deprecated or this function has a different parameters signature after the latest release. So there's a lot of safeguards to capture issues early. So that's one of the most important things that we're working on. And I think one of the things we mentioned in our pre-talk is like, you don't, or you have less of these issues when comparing Woo to other platforms like Shopify. So do you have any experience with Shopify and the direction it's going as opposed to Woo with the direction Woo is going?
The experience, it's as with anything else, it's about changing the problems you deal with. When you move from one country to another, you actually change the problems you're dealing with, same with changing the platforms.
I think that you're not actually solving the issues. You're just moving to different issues.
Right.
And sometimes you're choosing to solve some unknown issues you aren't even aware you're going to have to solve. But getting specific about Shopify, I kept watching the Google Trends, WooCommerce versus Shopify, for quite a while, for the last 1 or 2 years. I was writing some articles on that and performing some analysis myself. And the difference, it's like 5-1. 5 times more searches for Shopify than for WooCommerce, as reported, not by individual keyword searches, but by Google Trends. And this eventually translated in a change of, almost a change of market share. Depends on the source you're looking at, but they're both on average around-ish 25%. Some would report 20 to 30, WooCommerce versus Shopify. Some would say 30 to 20. And in terms of problems, I think Shopify has great X team, user experience team, great product managers. Basically, they have built an excellent wizard. If you remember the old times wizards, like a step-by-step wizard, they will just ask you some questions and then they will point you in the right direction. Later, WooCommerce picked up as well. They came with their own wizard that pops up that helps you.
Like for the first setup experience.
Yeah, for the first setup. But yeah, they came in after Shopify, as per my knowledge, but still I think the Shopify's experience, it's better. So those who are in the WooCommerce community and the WordPress community, we have stuff to learn from the other guys.
Right. So one of the things that impressed me about Shopify is like the last two steps in the checkout experience. The way you check out, and like a lot of forms are pre-filled based on things you might have ended on other platforms. This is for WooCommerce. You're really dependent on the payment gateway you're using to fill in stuff automatically. And like the Shopify platform makes this a cleaner experience in my eyes for the end user. So I think there's the biggest opportunity for the payment gateway providers is look at how Shopify is doing these last two steps from selecting the payment method and paying itself.
Yeah.
And copy it, like just steal it. It's better.
I would make a guess here that they got, I won't say they stole it. I would say they got inspired from Stripe, which were the first that I saw in the market that they actually built an excellent paying experience. And let's face it, that checkout thing is the reason to exist for the shop, for our work, for our agencies when we build the e-commerce. And that little chain at the end, it's not perfect.
Yeah, so we're actually talking with a couple of payment providers because we also have accessibility consultancy business. So we have 3 certified accessibility professionals in our team. And we're now talking with several payment providers, payment gateways to get their checkout accessible for people with keyboard accessibility issues or people using screen readers. So every year we do research on the biggest e-commerce platforms in the Netherlands and how accessible they are. And for 8 out of 15, you are not able to reach like the final steps of the checkout with just the keyboard. So there's a big opportunity for a lot of WooCommerce shops or WooCommerce shop owners to get a bit of a competitive edge. Because if you're the one doing like accessibility right or getting your checkout right, you're blowing away the competition on other WooCommerce shops or on other platforms.
Yeah. And besides the competition, there's the legal compliance in most of the countries.
Yeah. And especially next year, there's the European Accessibility Act coming through, which forces European countries to have legislation for the accessibility of web shops that make more than 2 million in revenue a year or have more than 10 employees. So that next year in June, it's going to be pressure on everyone to make sure that their web shops is accessible. And I'm expecting a lot of shops to handle this the same way that they did with the privacy legislation. Like look the other way for as long as possible until it's too late and then start implementing it. And our experience teaches us that the process of getting your organization up to speed with accessibility, making the changes needed, making sure that it's legally compliant is a process of several months. So if it's going to be next June that you have to be compliant, you better start now, right? Or you're going to be too late.
I actually have positive examples on this end. One of our customers, they actually invented and patented a device, a gear, they're manufacturing it for professional tennis players. And yeah, they're selling it all over the world. And a few months ago, we had this talk with them and we got certified, a couple of people on our team on the accessibility. And we had to implement quite a few changes there just so they are prepared. But they have done it not because of the European Act. They are based in Europe, but outside of EU. They have done it for literally for business reasons.
That's what I always say. There's the like the stick is the European Accessibility Act. You have to do it because it's the law. But there's a huge carrot. Like I don't understand how every marketer is like focused on performance. Everyone likes a fast website, right? Faster is better. Google rewards fast websites. This is the mentality. But for accessibility, it's exactly the same. An accessible website is like a benefit for everyone. If you break your arm, you're temporarily disabled and you have to find another way to use a website that you like to shop on. People who can use accessibility features spend longer on your website, right? User engagement goes up. And a lot of the changes that you're making are not even visible to the end user. They're just good UX, good user experience that you're building, like not having to press tab for 120 times to get to put something in your cart, or having the autocomplete for your address have actually make sense how it works, right? So it's a process that benefits everyone, and there's a very large segment of people that actually benefit directly from a better accessible experience.
Yeah, and I was recently talking to somebody here in Switzerland, and they were so pissed off with a website from a pretty big company here. It's called Manor. Because, hey, I have a really hard time checking out. Hey, Marius, why won't you reach out to them and tell them this and tell them that? And that was somebody who would not need accessibility features.
Yeah. We're with the biggest retailers in the Netherlands. So these are companies making like hundreds of millions in revenue every year. We're testing, like A/B testing, the accessible variants as opposed to the non-accessible variants to gather data on how much more effective it actually is to have a like an accessible add to cart button or an accessible search function.
Yeah, and on the accessibility and automated testing, we played a lot with some legacy framework years ago. We started with Codeception. And after writing quite a few thousands of lines of code, we eventually realized that it was unreliable. You would execute the same script two times in the same browser, you would get different results and errors. So we eventually switched over to Cypress, which is client-side JavaScript. And that worked pretty well for us. So now for certain clients, we do run batteries of tests as well, just to make sure this integration problem doesn't fall on their shoulders and that we can give them peace of mind. They can always know that their checkout still works.
Whether you're just starting to build that Woo shop for a client or looking to expand or scale an existing site, GoDaddy's e-commerce hosting solution is there for you and your projects. Expand a client store with access to thousands of extensions, or scale big time with conversion tools, multiple staff accounts, an integrated POS, marketplace integrations, and discounted shipping rates, plus a lot more. And if you continue to manage your site or you hand it over to the client, a single dashboard gives powerful tools such as online sales tracking and easy auto sync for all the store's inventory across the entire site. Plus, software, plugins, and extensions will be kept up to date, and regression and other testing is done continually to avoid site breakage. With that all said, keep your client sites humming along with e-commerce hosting from GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com.
You also mentioned in the beginning you work for some government websites and large e-commerce websites. Maybe you can share a few notable projects.
So for e-commerce, we're doing a large project, which is a web shop in 10 European countries that are making plastic sheets to measure. So you can order online different shapes of plastic sheets. And we've integrated like the WooCommerce store from these 10 different shops into like a back office where they're actually on the factory floor seeing the orders come in live on the table saws and all the lasers. And we've made an interface where all these orders are combined and then produced from the tablets in the factory. So it's really full service, full flow web shop. And for governments, yeah, we're working for our local governments in the Netherlands, state government or the national government, a couple of projects. And what is interesting is that we're learning lessons from e-commerce that we can then apply with like the government, because like I need a new passport. It's much like the same checkout flow that you would see in e-commerce. There's like the awareness and decision stages, but like there's no competitor on the other side, but you still need to guide people through this funnel and you need to get them to the next step, because if they're not entering the step, the intent is really high. So if they're not going from starting the application form to finishing the application form, there's obviously something confusing about the form there. So there's a lot of lessons that we can take from these different type of projects that we're doing in our portfolio that we can move to then other industries and other businesses and other verticals. In the same way, there's like really high security and privacy rules and expectations for governments, for banks, for insurers. And we're taking the lessons that we're learning there and taking them back into e-commerce to make sure like the processes are done in a way that updates are safe and we have data reliability and like all these types of lessons learned from this vertical that really appreciates the security part of WordPress development and moving it into like the move fast, break things part of WooCommerce development.
WordPress development done right. Agree with you.
Right. Yeah. That's basically it. That should be the tagline of the agency, WordPress development done right. So how is this experience for you? Because obviously with the very broad spectrum of customers that you have with the WooCommerce plugins, you must be like having a lot of different experience between types of customers.
Yeah, it's pretty broad and it ranges from shops selling dog food, pet food on a subscription, or even toothbrushes on a subscription.
Right.
And so on, and ranging to some very, very high profile customers such as Panasonic. We actually built the website, the e-commerce platforms for a couple of countries. And that was an extremely challenging project to be built with WooCommerce, because they wanted tons of features that you would normally get for a ton of money on other platforms, more expensive platforms, like maybe Magento, the Adobe customer experience, Adobe experience, or maybe a platform from SAP. But here they wanted to get all of that on WooCommerce. And basically all the learnings and the knowledge gathered from more than 1,000 projects, we had to condense it into the Panasonic website and review the codes of some of the plugins, because they actually wanted us to use some plugins in order to move fast and break things. And now, yeah, the Czech Republic and Polish are running on WooCommerce, which is something our team is very proud of.
Can you share something about how you review what your review process looks like for onboarding plugins made by third parties?
Yeah, sure. We have a list of preferred plugins which we have reviewed the code for, and we do monitor the code quality of the plugins using PHP Code Sniffer with the WordPress set of rules for security and code formatting and compliance. We also use a couple of tools to check the security of the code besides manually reviewing, but it's always good to use things such as Sneak to go to the code and other tools. And actually building on this need of our customers, the need being, hey, is this a good or bad plugin? We're about to launch wppluginreview.com, which will be a website that will automatically review the quality of the code using DevOps approaches, like automated approaches, and just to assign certain color codes, just like with fridges, you know, the energy label for the fridge, A, B, C, D, and so on, or for buildings. We're building this for plugins so that a non-technical person will immediately be able to grasp, is this a trustworthy or not trustworthy plugin?
Right. So you're making the process of selecting a plugin and comparing different plugins in the same space easier by showing like this has a D score on our automated tests for plugin quality.
Yeah. And going beyond just comparing features, because features are already being compared all over the internet, but comparing the quality of the code, for now, it required developers' time to actually go through the code, review it. So yeah, trying to automate this part.
Yeah. So one thing we're also taking into consideration is we internally have a point system that we give to plugins, and it's partially based on like the hard factors that you're sharing, like does it comply with PHP coding standards for the WordPress standard, or does it have any known security issues, these kind of things. But we're also...
The number of database queries is also an important factor.
Right. And if they have like filters and actions available to hook into how they're doing things, right? Because it's easy to do things the wrong way in WooCommerce. So seeing these positive signals on plugins, and we also take into account some soft factors, like are they continually updating WooCommerce plugins? You have this README text property called compatible with or tested up to. Are these up to date with like the current version or maybe the previous? Because if it's not, it's going to be like a score penalty for us deducting points from the plugin. Or do they have a clear revenue or monetization component? Because if they don't, it's going to be a liability for us, for the creator to abandon the project if they don't have a financial motive to continue on working on the project, right? So we have a couple of soft factors that we also take into account when grading plugins. And from this, it gets to a score where we say like 75 points or above, we're like, okay, we don't have any serious concerns, let's do this. And then 75 to 50 points, we go to the customer and advise them, these are our concerns. Do you want to push on and embed this, or do you want to like reconsider or compare other products in the space? And then below 50, we highly disencourage our customers to use these kinds of plugins, because it's going to be like a business risk, yeah, using these kinds of plugins.
Yeah, that's a clever way to do it, to rank the plugins. And changing the topics a bit, before we wrap up today, you are on the very technical side of things. Currently, I run the commercial side of the business, and I would be curious from your perspective, if you were to, like, two things I have to ask you. If you were to give an advice for some other agency owners who don't have a CTO by their side, when they should consider getting a CTO by their side, at which moment, at which size of the agency, when is this a good time? And the second thing is, what would you expect, or ideally, what would a CTO of an agency expect from the CEO to be or to have in order to foster the best possible collaboration? That is the goal.
Yeah. So one of the things that makes my job as a technical director easy is that we have a very clear focus on WordPress and WooCommerce, right? There's all these new technologies constantly popping up around, for example, headless CMSs that do one thing really well. And then a lot of people are hyped up by the availability of these kinds of technologies and then jumping on board and then figuring out, like you said before, that there's like, you're not solving issues, you're just having different issues. If you have a very clear vision on the core technologies then that you use and like a very stable base of things that you develop on, then you can have some freedom putting things on top of it, right? So if you're always working with WordPress and WooCommerce, or if you're always working with Shopify, then you can move some parts around that without endangering your business or having to retrain your whole company.
They call it to build.
If that stable base is missing.
Exactly. It's the stable base. It's about building and consolidating, probably.
Yeah. And also, once you have that stable base, it's easier to tell the story to customers, to either employees, why you're choosing for X and not for Y. Why you're chasing a certain technology and not chasing the other, right? Because it becomes easier to make choices for certain technologies. And then on the opposite side, when you don't have a clear vision from the get-go, like what is the stable base and what are the dynamic movable parts, then it's time to get a CTO, because then you need someone to figure out like, what is the stable base going to be? What is going to be the technology that we can build on now that's still going to be available and relevant in 5 years? What is going to, like, what are the trends going to be in developer experience? And how do we make sure that we don't fall behind on the developer experience while maintaining the stable base, right? These are the tasks that, in my eyes, the technical director has mostly, like, keep things predictable, but also steadily moving in the right direction regarding developer experience, regarding stability of the platform that you're building, regarding customer experience, moving this. And then as the second part of your question, and you have a mostly technical background too, but you're now more in the CEO position, I would say, is that like one of the hardest things for CEOs and the technical directors is balancing innovation with business goals, right? So on one part, you're trying to make new things, you're trying to create wow experience for your customers. At the same time, you have to move into a space where things are known and not everything is new every single time, which costs a lot of time and reduces predictability. And I think the most important thing a CEO can do is be very clear on what the expectations are regarding business goals. And because this also determines how much room there is for innovation. So how is your experience, because you have a bit of both experiences, how do you manage balancing these two parts?
I came to realize that both are very important, balancing both the short, medium-term profitability, but also the long-term ability to stay in the market. So for now, I'm just allocating my personal time with a percentage such as 20 to 80, 20 for innovation. Actually, this percentage was valid 1 year ago. I was doing roughly one day per week for innovation and strategizing and market research, and 80% doing the day-to-day stuff. Ever since I moved this year to Switzerland, we actually have a new CEO. It's our former CEO, so I'm not running the company anymore since March. And I shifted this percentage. Now I'm more onto the 95% of looking into the markets, experimenting, talking to various business people at various levels, from the C-suite down to the entrepreneurs, not even the local entrepreneurs. I'm also, because I'm technical, I'm experimenting a lot with AI nowadays, because there is this wave and I'm trying to understand, do we want to write it? Can we write it? And I'm writing myself some prototypes to understand how it works. And why I'm doing this, it's, again, to be able to understand, do we want to be there in 1, 2, 3 years? Are we able to? And that gives me the necessary bones for the meat to be put on when we have a conversation with somebody about AI. I don't just blah, blah by reading several articles. I actually try the open API and I know how it works. I know the limitations firsthand. And that helps a lot in being able to both better understand what customers want and need and what can be actually achieved. And it also helps with having meaningful conversations with any future person responsible in our company for AI, like a dedicated CTO for like a technical director for AI projects, eventually AI advisory AI projects. So to answer your question, basically it's about allocating a percentage of the time for the present. Normally, I would say for somebody who's doing day-to-day operations, I would say it's 90% of the time focus on existing clients. But don't forget about the future. At least 10% of the time to be spent on just reading newsletters. I know for some people, this doesn't sound like work. It sounds like wasting time. So it's fine to waste 10% of the time on just looking around and reading and trying.
Being ready for opportunities.
And seeing them, creating the space for you to see the opportunities.
Right. So how are you experiencing the volatile space of AI at the moment?
Different trends, different forces. I'm waiting to see the checks and balances that will come into play, including the regulatory compliances. What I see is a lot of buzz, a lot of wow effect, thanks to the popularization of large language models through ChatGPT. At the same time, well, they do lower the costs of their tokens and of the usage of ChatGPT, but it's still heavily subsidized. So I'm waiting to see when the real price kicks in, what's going to happen. It's interesting to create a new SaaS product, a new plugin just based on ChatGPT, but then you have this huge vendor bargaining power. You just have one single vendor you're building your business on, and if they cut your trunk, you're in the air, and it will take a while to rewire yourself to Bard or to the Amazon AI and so on. So these are all of the risks that you need to take into consideration when considering going with AI. But for some processes inside of the company, I am a huge fan of using AI, for example, to sort data, to search through knowledge bases. You can connect ChatGPT to an API. You can basically start chatting with your HubSpot and get the latest reports. You can talk with your bank statement through ChatGPT nowadays and ask about your spending trends. Or if you're a CTO, if you're a CFO, you can talk to your Xero through the API and get financial forecasts, which opens up some interesting avenues.
Yeah, it's interesting to see AI at the moment as a virtual assistant, like assisting in getting data and insights instead of doing the actual work, right? If you have a Copilot integration when programming, you're seeing a lot of suggestions, but you also always need the oversight of an experienced developer to value what it's saying to you. Does this contain any security issues, or is this a nightmare for maintainability? Like, these kind of judgments, you need someone to manage these. But at the same time, I've looked up the syntax for like the PHP date function a million times in my life. And now I just tell it like, I want this format and make it for me. Or when writing tests, I'm like, all right, I need 5,000 postcodes from these 8 different countries, because I don't have to make up a list of these kinds of repetitive things anymore. And I just have to check it if it's right instead of generating it myself. It's interesting. It's also got a long way to go.
It is. And there's a long way to go. And there's a huge reason for which tools like Copilot and the AI assistant, for example, from like Claude AI, which is good with coding, or the AI assistant from JetBrains that lives inside PHP Storm, which is also very good. The reason for which there's a long way before, and I'm not sure that these things will ever be able to replace developers, but they will make developers so much productive and faster. It's because, and this is a metaphor, it's like a story I can quickly share with you. Years ago, when I was studying probability, one of our professors in mathematics and statistics said, imagine you have a monkey randomly typing on a keyboard. Now, please, Mr. and Mrs. Students, calculate the probability of the monkey typing in the Three Musketeers novel.
Right.
Okay, what we have now is we have a very smart monkey that's typing on your keyboard, but it's still typing randomly, kind of randomly with a very well-trained randomness. But it's actually the AI, it's actually guessing what the next character should be based on the previous characters.
A context-aware monkey.
It's a context-aware monkey where some call it a very fancy autocomplete that tries to please you, always to please you.
Yeah. So my current experience has been it makes good programmers faster, it makes bad programmers worse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's my current experience. There's the category of programmers that are still very much going through the learning curve and growing from the junior position. 3-4 years ago, they would be the ones copying Stack Overflow answers and putting them into production code, right? And that's now shifted from copying from Stack Overflow, like auto-completing from Copilot. that's the shift, but it's still the same problem. I think that's the key insight, that you're not removing issues, you're just changing them.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. Well, I think we can wrap up for today, Niels.
Yeah, thank you for the interesting conversation. I've learned a lot.
Same here, Niels. And let's keep in touch offline.
Definitely, yeah.
It's my first time doing this chat, so I would love to be able to keep in touch.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. I'll see you at the next WordCamp Europe, definitely.
Sounds good. All right, take care.
All right.
Have a good day.
Take care.
Hey, Bob WP here, and I'd like to thank GoDaddy for their support. Please consider checking them out at godaddy.com. And thanks again for tuning into Woo Agency Chat. And if you're not subscribed, just visit dothewoo.io/subscribe or find us on your favorite pod player. And remember, you can subscribe to any of our shows directly or hear them all on the full Do The Woo channel feed. And lastly, we do welcome your thoughts, insights, and feedback on all of our episodes. Just head over to dothewoo.io and leave a comment. So until the next time.